Does that story I just read make you a little uncomfortable? Now, all of us have gone to a dinner, and I don't know whether it was an awards banquet or a wedding reception or maybe a funeral repast or somebody's retirement dinner, that you and whoever you're with on that occasion, you look at the room saying, "Where shall we sit?" Now, you have a lot of strategies. Let's sit toward the back so we can get out of here quick. That's one strategy. Let's sit in the front so everyone knows we're here. Oh, there, I see one of our friends. Let's go sit with them. They're always fun. Or, see, that we don't want to sit with them. Let's go the other way. It's not just me, right? I think not. I think you do this too. Well, all I can say is thank God for place cards. But in the ancient Near East, they had no place cards. And so we have this peculiar story in Luke. It's the Sabbath, and the host is a Pharisee. Now, if we were in the old vaudeville days, when I said Pharisees, you would say, "Boo, hiss." They're the rule keepers, and they're the antagonists of Jesus. So he's the host, the Pharisee, and Jesus tells this peculiar parable. Now, maybe it's just a lesson in table manners. Maybe he's just saying, look, when you go to a dinner and they don't have assigned places, don't embarrass yourself by going to the front of the head of the table. Go to the worst seat and hope against hope that the host will go, "Oh no, you can't sit here behind the potted palm. Come with me and sit at the head of the table." Maybe that's what he's saying, but that seems very trite as a lesson from our Lord. So what else besides table manners might he be talking about? Now, I think he's making two points. First, Jesus is talking about the nature of discipleship. You and I, who will share this meal, have been invited to the table. And so how should we comport ourselves when we get there? Should we use the old elbow move to get closest, or should we stand back? Is there a deeper idea of humility here? An idea of coming humbly, faithfully, in hope and in confidence, but with concern for others. In our celebrity society, it's hard to hear these words, because the idea of celebrity society, and if you have any doubts about this, buy the New York Times. There's a whole section on society. It might be headed, "Those who elbowed their way to the front of the table." And there are pictures of them at various events. But Jesus says, relax. Relax. Your status has nothing to do with where you sit. You are beloved because you're a child of God, because I named you and I claimed you and you are mine. So wherever you sit, you are sitting in the presence of God. Don't worry about elbowing your way to the front. Now, there's a story. I'm a historian by training, and there's a story. It's probably an apocryphal story, but I like the story anyway. It's the story of Charlemagne. You know, Charlemagne in the Middle Ages was the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And his long funeral procession began and made its way to the steps of the cathedral. And the page called out to the bishop who was standing on the steps, "Your Eminence, comes Charlemagne, the Lord and King of the Holy Roman Empire." And the bishop responded, "I know him not." And the Page, taken aback. "Try it again. Your Eminence." "Comes Charles, a good and decent man." And the bishop responded, "I know him not." Finally, a young priest, taking pity on the page, stepped forward and said, "Your Eminence, comes Charles, a lowly sinner, seeking the mercy and comfort of Christ." And the bishop responded, "Then let him come." That's the story of humility. We don't have to offer our credentials, and not at this table or any other table do you need to sit at the head to be of significance. You are of significance every step of the way. Now, it's our theology, of course, that informs how we feel about this. And I like to, when I was teaching young students, I would tell them, you know, you can have dog theology, dogma, if you like, or you can have cat theology, catechism, if you like. Now, you know the difference, do you? In dog theology, we say, "You feed me, you keep me warm, you give me a blanket, you take me for walks, you love me. You must be a god." Cat theology: "You feed me, you keep me warm, you play with me, I must be a god." There's a story of two dogs and a cat that died on the same day, and they get to the pearly gates. And the first dog is a Doberman Pinscher, and St. Peter says, "Now tell me a little bit about yourself so I know where to assign you." He said, "I was a brave dog. I guarded my master. No one harmed my master when I was there, and I responded immediately to every command." I said, "St. Peter, you may sit to my right." Then came a boxer dog. Same question. The boxer said, "I was a loving pet to a family with many children. I let them pull my ears and ride on my back. I ate their scraps, and when they didn't want their peas and threw them under the table, I ate those too. I was a loving and faithful dog." Says, "Then you may sit to my left." And then turns to the cat and says to the cat, "You know the question I want to ask you. What is your answer?" And the cat responds, "I believe you're sitting in my chair." Now, I don't want the cat lovers to run me off the property at the close of worship, but you get the point, don't you? Striving and envy and pushing and self-promotion are not worthy of you, are not worthy of us, because we have that great gift. You were named and claimed by Christ, and that is all you need. So you can live your life in faith and with humility. Now, we all know Johann Sebastian Bach, but do you know that in his lifetime, he was at a St. Thomas church, and the people kept wanting to fire him because every week he would write a new cantata. Is this true in this church? He never played the good old hymns we like. He kept introducing new things. And they kept trying to get rid of him, but it never worked. But he was not known outside of that congregation and not known very well inside that congregation. It was only after he had died and Felix Mendelssohn, another musician, came along and popularized Bach. And today, we would not be without the music of Johann Sebastian Buck. He didn't go to the head chair. He sat humbly at the back of St. Thomas's, writing his cantatas each week. So a second point Jesus is making in this parable is he turns, you know, then to the Pharisee and he says, now, some instructions on party giving. When you give a banquet, don't invite your rich friends so that they'll invite you back and take you to the country club next week. But rather, look for the least, the littlest, the loneliest, the lowest, and invite them. We are today in this land that we love, engaged in a very difficult and divisive conversation about who is invited. Invited to be Americans, invited to participate in American society, invited to have the blessings of liberty. We Christians must be informed, first of all, by these words. Invite the loneliest and the littlest. We have to keep the main thing, the main thing. Now, we can't give up security and all of the rest of it. Those are legitimate and important concerns. But we have to remember the place of mercy and grace. When I worked for the National Council of Churches, I flew all the time, all over the world and all over the country. And one time I was taking a flight to, somewhere, I think Seattle or someplace. But I was changing flights in Denver. And those of you who fly know that the Denver airport is like in Kansas or someplace. It's a long way from Denver. And, of course, my plane landed at gate A13. My next flight was taking off from gate K4, which is two or three counties away from gate A. So I made my way over there, and I sat down. And when I sat down, there was a woman sitting next to me. And she made it known to me that she was hearing impaired and asked, would I help her if they made announcements? And, of course, pretty soon the person came to the gate and did what they always do. You know, there's nothing wrong with my ears, and I couldn't quite understand. But to the effect, we're going to board now. So I turned to the woman and said, we're going to get on the plane now. It turned out that I was in row 6C and she was in row 6D. So we boarded together and I helped her put her bag up. And we, in the way of travelers, we'd sort of made a kind of compact to be friends, travel friends here. So we sat down and they started all the announcements about put out your cigarettes, well, really, fasten your seatbelts, the oxygen masks, and so on and so forth. She turned to me, she said, in her halting way, I don't need to know anything about the safety, but if they say anything about wine, give me a little wave. That's how we should live. Don't get caught up in all the drama of your family or your neighborhood or your nation or even the world. But if they say anything about wine and bread, give each other a little wave to remember that it is this table that we get our identity. Like most Presbyterian pastors, I have an expensive theological education. And I used to say that I learned all my theology, however, in the singing of the hymns. And there's a lot of truth to that. But I also learned it from my children. And when one of my children was about 3, now he's 37 now and a professor of sociology, so it worked out all right. But when he was about 3, he was in the backyard with a friend swimming in the pool. Now, I don't mean a pool. I mean one of those little plastic dishes that have grass blades and buoys and, You don't even want to think about it. I was sitting in my chair with a glass of lemonade. I was the lifeguard, of course. And he and his friend were jumping in and out. And pretty soon, he got out of the pool, and he came to me, and he said, "Mom, can I have some of your lemonade?" And as I proffered him the glass, you could almost see in a bubble over his head his nursery school teacher appear, and he looked into the glass and he said, "Mom, if I drink this, will I catch your dreams?" He meant germs. And so, drawing on my deep scientific background, I explained to him that mothers and boys share a certain universe of germs and that it's impossible to catch anything from one another. He took a drink and he walked back to the swimming pool. And even today, I can still see that little back of his as I thought, "Oh, my son, if it were just that simple, take a sip of my lemonade and catch my dream for the kind of man you will be." Think about that. No more math workbooks. No more parallel parking lessons. No more late nights with what's her name. Just a little sip from my lemonade, and you'll catch the dream I have for the kind of man you will be. And that, my friends, has become my predominant Eucharistic understanding. Drink from this cup and come to learn God's dreams.